From ACB Radio Mainstream, welcome to Tuesday Topics. For the next hour, we will be discussing a topic of interest to blind and visually impaired people. And now, from Miami, Florida, the host of Tuesday Topics, Paul Edwards.
Good evening and welcome to Tuesday Topics. I'm Paul Edwards in Miami, Florida. And thank you very much for being with us. Thanks to our producer, Brian Charlson, and our recorder and editor, Steve Bauer, who turns our chaos every week into a listenable program. Thanks also, of course, to George Bies and Talking Community for making this software available. One of the things that we used to do when Tuesday Topics was around a very long time ago was to operate occasionally with forums where we simply solicited people's opinions on a topic that we felt had some interest, and sometimes a topic where there was a certain amount of controversy. And we decided that it might be fun to do that tonight. And so we are not going to be operating our Tuesday Topics program in the way that we have become accustomed to operating it over the last several months, i.e. with the first half where we do a full-fledged interview, and with the second half where we operate with people asking the interviewee questions. Instead, we're going to operate with an open forum tonight, and the topic of that open forum will be soliciting sighted assistance. Do blind people do a good job of that? How much sighted assistance should blind people be asking for? Should we really be pretty independent, or is it okay to be codependent? Should we pay for the sighted assistance we receive, or should we look for volunteers? How should all of that work? And these are the kinds of questions that we're going to be looking at tonight as kind of the great debate on the subject of the care and feeding of people who can see, who help those of us who are blind to be effective. Sometimes you think about these things when you're in an unfamiliar environment, as I was last weekend in Tallahassee. Cheryl and I and Hannah were at the convention of the Florida Council of the Blind, which I hope some of you were able to hear. We had figuring out what was going on and watching other people interact with sighted folks as well. So, let's begin by opening it to whoever wants to take it. Please remember to tell us who you are and where you're from. And let's start out by saying, is it okay for blind folks to ask for sighted assistance? And perhaps take it one step further and ask whether or not we should typically offer to pay those folks when they provide us with help. Who wants to be first?
This is Bonnie, and I'm from Ohio. I think that it is perfectly all right to ask for assistance and also to offer to pay for it. I think it gives a blind person room to move. They have a little more discretion with being able to say how they want something done if they pay. I think it also imparts dignity as well. I remember being in a situation, I was talking with a friend of mine just yesterday, as a matter of fact, who for several years has also cleaned for me, and when we first got involved in that, and I pay her, of course, I also went with her to do some grocery shopping and go to libraries. She was good at many different things. I also think you should match a person to a job. Some people are good at one thing and may not be good at another, and it works better if you match the person to the skill you need. But anyway, when I was doing these other things with her, I was taking more of her time than she was willing to give, and I didn't know it. And it hurt our friendship for a very, very long time. Now that I'm moving, we finally discussed this, and I apologized again for having misused that relationship and altering the relationship. And she said it was fine, and we talked about it, and we'll probably continue to see each other. But the relationship was changed and altered when I didn't really understand how important her time was to her, and I was using her more than she meant to give assistance for.
I think that is certainly an issue. And there also may be an issue in terms of trying to mix friendship with paid employment. So, let's see who else wants to jump in on this point.
Hi, this is Barb. Well, I think certainly it's quite okay for us to ask, to get some assistance from sighted people. I think both paid and voluntary assistance are quite okay, depending on what it is. It's hard to explain. There are certain things that obviously you're going to pay for, a driver, for example. If you need something that you're going to, a certain task that needs to be done, and it's driving or a certain, then of course you would pay. Sometimes it's real helpful to ask at the outset what timeline that person has, you know, so you don't really get bogged down to this. I also have a volunteer. There's an organization here. It's an interfaith organization that at the time I wanted a volunteer, you know, once a week and so forth. So on Fridays, this person does come when I get home from work, and we go through the mail. We sort out things, and then, you know, if there's an errand or something that I have to get done. And I know that that there's a two-hour block of time that she's basically willing to give. And it's, of course, worked out really well. Yet I have a paid person who I pay every week to give me a ride to work. I go home by bus, but I do get a ride into work because the bus schedule doesn't, you know, allow me to use their bus schedule to go to work. So. And I think as far as a paid person, in terms of friendship and so forth and so on, again, it depends, yeah. I mean, if it's a formal kind of thing, yeah, that's true. But certainly Sue and I have had a beer together or we've had pizza together or something like that and really wouldn't, you know, alter anything in that respect. If you're going to the doctor's and you need someone to drive you, or you're going a certain place, yeah, of course, you know, I would certainly pay them. Unless somebody that you know is willing to volunteer their time and tells you that, no, I don't want it, you know, I'd like to do this and so forth and so on. So I guess, you know, with a little discretion, and I think up front, like I say, it's saying, you know, really finding out in terms of timeline, I think that really does help, because then it tells that person that you're respecting their time, and, you know, it does help. Anyway, that's my words of wisdom for the moment.
So, does anyone else want to get involved in this whole question of volunteers and whether we should pay for them or not and how we ought to make those decisions?
Hello, everyone. This is Gary Wood. I feel that it doesn't hurt to ask for help if you need it, and probably a good idea to pay for it, to offer to pay. And like, my brother helped me the other day. I offered to pay him for some work, but he said I didn't need to. Thanks. But I think that Bonnie was saying something that's true, I think, with us sometimes, at least I think, that sometimes we don't think about the time, I suppose, infringing on someone else's time or things of that nature. And one time I said something about I need something from the store, need something, and then someone pointed out that that's more of a demand. I mean, you should ask, if you're going out, would you get me this or that, which is good, but sometimes I suppose that's better than saying I need that. I was, at that particular point, I wasn't feeling too well, so I guess it was a poor choice of words at that particular time, but I think there probably isn't anything wrong with asking for help if you need it, or paying for it if you can.
This is Brian from Boston. I'm a firm believer that in the value of the barter system. To my life, I haven't paid for sighted assistance. I've received it from three or four different people. One is a roommate, and it's, again, a bartering situation. I own the house and the car. She pays to stay in the house. We have an in-law apartment. She drives my car and puts gas in the car. She has free access to it when we're not using it as a family. But we really treat it more like a family experience. I do things for her. She does things for me. I do things for my wife. My wife does things for me. And it's a bartering kind of situation. Nobody's sitting there saying, you gave me three services, I only gave you two. It's unfair, yada, yada. It's very much a, I'll help you when you need it, you, as long as it's understood that you help me when I need it. That's an in-the-house family, extended family kind of scenario that's worked fairly well. I think that it's important that we not get into a situation where we establish a cost where all exchanges are monetary exchanges.
Hi, this is Cheryl from Miami. Assistance is a really wide thing. Of course, we have to ask for assistance for little, where's the elevator, please? That sort of thing. So, yes, we need to do that. But I think a person has to find out. I guess this is for me, okay? For myself, I ask myself when I want to ask for assistance. Sometimes I don't want to ask for assistance. And I ask myself why. Is it because I'm stubborn and it's really important for me to prove to myself that I can get something done? Or is it because I don't want to impose on the person? Or do I want to ask assistance because I'm lazy and I really don't want to do it myself? So there's some other factors that play in that whole question for me personally. Do I think it's right to ask assistance? For assistance, of course. And something that I have for myself is I turn the table around and I think, okay, if I'm the sighted person and they're the blind person, what is it that I would want to be paid for? Gas is awfully expensive. If I'm going to have somebody running me around just out of a kindness, even if they said no, 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 I'm going to find a place to stick a $10 bill or something, depending on where I'm going. As Brian said, I think the barter system is a really good thing as well. I think the bottom line is that whoever is giving us assistance is appreciated and valued. And because, you know, we can pay somebody and they're still not feeling appreciated because maybe we grumbled and griped about it or about the way that they interacted with us, maybe. So I think showing appreciation for that person is more valuable or adds value to the monetary or barter thing that we might do for them.
Okay, so clearly all of us think that there are certainly circumstances where it's okay to ask for assistance. And some of us feel that barter will often work as well as actually paying folks. But let's stick to families for a minute and ask a question. Should we expect more of our families? And is it more okay, for instance, to ask for assistance from brothers and sisters or parents or children come to that than it is just kind of members of the general public? And should we expect members of our family to provide us with assistance as a matter of course?
Hi, this is Brian Collins from Long Beach, California. I do believe that there are times when that is a necessity. However, I think that in a lot of cases, we take advantage of the familiar. And since family is what's familiar with us, to us, we have a tendency to use that a lot more than we might any other avenue that's out there. And I think that as a general rule, we do have a tendency to take advantage of that. However, I'd also know that if we were anybody else who had all of our faculties about us, most people have a tendency to ask family for assistance before they ask anybody else. And, you know, it's like somebody who's moving. A lot of times they will have a big family event to have, you know, to help out with that. Or if there's a small disaster of some kind, the family members will come over and help to kind of clean up that situation. And so to a certain extent, I think that taking advantage of our family is probably not a bad thing if it's done with the right attitude and for the right motives. You know, if we're doing it, as someone has already said, out of a sense of laziness or fear, then I think that is a definite challenge, and we need to be real careful about that, because family members are probably going to be a lot more critical than other people are of what kind of things that we're asking for. And so we should be far more careful about that and be less concerned about our own selfishness, I guess is a good way to put it. I don't know. I like the idea, though, that what Gary said with his brother. I think that if we could find some way, whether it's financial or in some other way, say, you know what, I need a little assistance or a little help with something. And I know that, let's say, Gary knows something about computers. I know that you've been having trouble with computers. Why don't I come over and see what I can do to help you out with that? And basically do what Brian said, make a little bartering thing going on. And I found that this really does work. I get a lot more positive help or input when I offer something before, you know, I even ask for anything. I'm always willing to offer my assistance to somebody else so that when I do need it, the introduction to the barter has already been made. And now all we have to do is come up with some kind of an agreement, so to speak.
To add a little twist to your question also, Paul, how many times do we resist common help that a family would give to one another simply because we have our blindness looming in front of us? You know, when it's just a normal thing that a family member might come over and want to say, and especially after this gentleman had said a disaster or something. You know, there's just things that are common, family things, but sometimes we shove family away just because we're blind, and so we don't want to burden or whatever, and they're not even thinking of that. They're just operating out of family. But while I have the mic, and I'll hurry, I think that family can be abused, and I want to deliberately use that word abused, because if we're willing to pay for somebody else to do something that's above and beyond normal daily activity, then why shouldn't a family member, let's say I'm thinking of a child, probably because I have one, but perhaps a child should receive that same thing, because they're watching, they're observing. And to them, it's like, wow, well, they're willing to give of themselves to sacrifice something for someone else to help. Why can't they for me? Why is it when it comes to me, hey, it's just what's expected? And I don't think that sets well. As I said before, I think a person being valued in this whole process and a person being respected is the most important thing.
I think that that's true, and I think that what Brian Charlson mentioned about the barter system, and I think Brian Collins said so too, I think that that's the way to do things. You know, you live with people, you need help from people, and maybe you can figure out a way to help them back, and I think that's probably the way it should be.
One of the things, this is Bonnie again, that I think happens a lot with blind people is that we get so involved in getting the help that we need that we forget sometimes to be interested in the lives of the people who give us the help. And you don't have to do a whole lot. It's not condescending at all. It has to be real. But sometimes we get so involved in trying to get the help that when we do get it and we're with someone, we forget to ask them about their lives, and so we spill out all this stuff that's going on in our lives. So we forget to ask them about their kids, their husbands, their wives, their friends, how things are going at work or anywhere else or anything else they're doing in their lives. And I think that's one of the things that I think really hurts friendships between sighted people and blind people, because sometimes we get wrapped up in ourselves and we don't do enough. And we think about what we need and maximize our getting as much as we can while we're with someone rather than thinking about what it is that we can give.
Yeah, that's often, you know, I'm sure it's so true. And I know for myself, you know, I get more help from my friends than I do from my family. My family actually isn't here, you know, generally, except for my twin sister, but the rest of them are scattered throughout the country and so forth. But I think generally it's always been that way. I think it's a give-and-take process, you know, I really do. And it's something that's a very personal one and very individual one, depending partly on your relationship with that person, you know. It really is. We were invited to a friend's house last weekend for supper, I guess Sunday, and now Memorial Day, we'll have those same friends, you know, for a picnic and that kind of thing. And it is. It's a give-and-take process, and I like what Brian said about bartering and so forth. And, yeah, it just makes sense to try and do something for others as they, you know, do for you. And often, too, another thing you can do is, especially if someone does something special, send them a note of appreciation. Send them a plant or send them, you know, say, gee, you know, I really appreciate you. It never hurts.
One of the things that Cheryl raised was this whole question of children. And I know, speaking for myself, someone who's raised three and I'm now raising a fourth, it was one of the things that I was most sensitive about. Because for me anyway, I didn't want my children to grow up perceiving their father as helpless. At the same time, I absolutely wanted them to accept responsibilities around the house and to do certain tasks. And so it was a constant struggle to find the right mix and the right level of expectations in terms of assistance that would operate.
This is Bonnie again, and I have a son who is 21. He no longer lives with me, but he and his girlfriend sometimes help me with things, and I'm very considerate of their time. And when he was living with me, I did expect him to do certain things around the house, and I realized that there were chores that he should do and that there are things that you have to learn to do and you have to be responsible and do the things that need to be done, just because that's a part of growing up. And I think where the line is having the expectation that your child should do it because you want help all the time. I mean, we all know even sighted people who every time they want a soda or a bag of chips, they send their kid to the kitchen or they send the kid upstairs to get their whatever it is they're looking for. And that's an abuse of raising a child. Some people raise children and think that now that the stage of taking care of them is over, that their kids owe them. And those are egregious, extreme examples. But I think what you have to do is give your kids things to do that you would give any kid to do, and ask yourself the question, is this something that I'm doing for this child's growth, as opposed to, am I doing this because, you know, they owe me or because I need them to help me? And sometimes I think there is a line where you say, look, the thing I am asking you for, maybe to read something in the old days or whatever before we had screen readers and before we had open book and other things, there were times when you did need people to read, but I think that they also have to have an understanding of the fact that there are times when we do need help from them, as long as you don't abuse it. And I think you have to keep the communication open and say to them, even though it is kind of hairy, I think we do have to say, am I asking too much of you? And if you ever feel I am, even though I am your parent, I think we should talk about it because I don't want to abuse it.
Brian here. I was having a conversation with a friend here recently, and I said, you know, I knew when my family realized that I was an independent individual when they wrote me out of all of their wills, the older members of my extended family, as a beneficiary and wrote me in as executor. Clearly, I must have succeeded in doing that barter scenario successfully, because now, rather than thinking of me as an entity that is going to need more than I give, it's the other way around. And it's actually worked out in terms of my relationship with family, who were, of course, my first guide when I was first blighted. My sister was called my red-headed seeing-eye dog. She'd walk me to and from, you had to use a long white cane. And now she's coming to me for car loans, you know, so it all evens out in the wash.
One of the proposals that's out there and that ACB has certainly talked about in the past has to do with legislation that ADAPT, which is a pretty militant disability group, has been working on for the past several years. Sometimes it's known as MECASA. And at the heart of MECASA is the idea that an individual who is disabled is entitled to funding that will cover the cost of attendant care that enables that individual to operate outside of a nursing home. And there are a lot of people who feel that folks who are blind ought to be entitled to this sort of assistance as well, and who believe that that assistance ought to be made available for reading, for driving, for doing the very things that we're talking about tonight. Should the government get involved in providing funding for this sort of service? And is this an appropriate model for us to look at to get the sighted assistance that we need?
Paul, this is Bonnie again, and I think it has an awful lot to do. When you first asked this question, my immediate answer was no. But then I thought about it, and I remember reading just recently an article about the increase in the blind population among the elderly. Now, obviously, elderly people may, in many cases, be housebound and cannot get out to get help. So I think for them, you may need some incentive, some program like that where the government can be involved and can help with some monetary help, but as an initiative and an incentive for other people to help. But on the other hand, I can also remember being in a situation where I had someone helping me and the county was paying for some help that I was getting, and I can remember that person abusing the hours. She wanted to collect for all of the hours that we were allotted, even though she didn't work those hours. And so it can always be abused, and of course that's an individual situation. However, I think for younger people, I would encourage younger people to reach out to the community and get to know people, because I think having a program where people automatically have money coming from the government does strip people of reaching out to the community and making friends and getting help. And I believe in my life, I have many times, more often than not, tried to get help through people that I know, through getting connected with the community. I think working hand in hand, giving to the community, serving the community in whatever way you can as a volunteer. I'm a lay speaker, for example. I was on a church choir. I did some other things in the community. Those things are connectors that help you get to know people in the community. And those things, getting help and receiving hand, can often go hand in hand. However, for the elderly, it may not work as well. But I think if you give too much, I think people just end up sitting home waiting for someone to come and do for them so they can get paid. And it takes the incentive to go out and meet people. And I think we need to encourage blind people as much as we possibly can to be a part of a community and meet others.
The other thing, I like what you said, Bonnie, very true. There's so many things that blind people could do, too, in terms of volunteering. And it's something that I find a lot of people really don't do in the community. And they could do it from their home. They could do it, you know, there's the Red Cross, there's United Way, there's all kinds of things, you know, that people could certainly do. It's something that I think people really should look at, because not only do you get to know people, but you're giving back.
I guess I'm a little disappointed in some of the responses that I'm hearing from folks, because on the one hand, I hear folks saying that it's okay for us to pay for assistance on occasion. I hear us saying that it's okay for us to work out some kind of a barter system. But the moment that the government or an agency becomes involved, I hear people beginning to back off. And I don't quite understand why that ought to be the case. Why does it matter where the money comes from, whether it comes from you or whether it comes from the government? If you acknowledge the fact that blind people actually need the assistance in order to effectively operate in the community, then it seems to me that no matter where that assistance comes from, it makes sense for it to be available. So somebody needs to help me to understand why there's a difference that the government's involved here.
Well, for me, and I'm only going to speak for me, I don't want to speak for anybody else here, and I want to make sure that's clear. I believe that somebody has to pay somewhere. And I would rather it come from somebody I know rather than an anonymous taxpayer somewhere. And I believe that the more we depend on the government, the higher taxes are going to be, the less likely people are going to be happy with it. And it kind of is a vicious circle. And I know that this is a strange twist sometimes, but I would rather do without, personally, than to have dependence on the government. I've had my share of that, where I have depended to one degree or another on the government, and I wasn't comfortable with the way I felt with that. For some reason, I can't really explain. It actually made me feel like I was something less than what I really was. And I felt that it was easier for me to actually go out and earn the right or the income or whatever it was to pay for my own help. Or, if nothing else, to at least be able to say, well, I need help, and I'm willing to do what I need to do to get that help, rather than to sit on my backside and ask for help from a source that is somewhat anonymous in its nature. The people who work there are paid to do a job, and they have no concern for me as an individual. They have no concern for my situation, and they definitely are there to try to find holes in anything that I may be telling them so that they can actually prevent me from receiving services. And this increases my feelings of like I'm actually doing something wrong, because their goal, their job, is to just find out if I'm lying so that they can prevent me from receiving any kind of help. It's okay to receive help from the government if you truly have no other avenue. I think, though, that we need to do everything in our power to show personal responsibility and go out and earn that on our own, if nothing else. And I know people will argue with this and complain about this, but I've been there, and I can say that it's a good feeling when it's done. But I've gone out and I picked up garbage and got paid for it. I've gone out and I've done jobs that were, to put it bluntly, disgusting, simply because I didn't like receiving government money, and I would rather do that, and felt that I actually earned that money so that I could pay somebody to actually do what I really truly needed help with. when in truth, most of the stuff that I find myself sometimes, you know, when I was younger, I would ask for help when it truly, I really didn't need the help. It was because I was afraid to go out and try it for myself, or I was afraid of what other people might think, or I was afraid to ask for help from somebody I actually knew because I was afraid that they might think that I was, you know, lower than I actually was in some way. And I realized that in the long run, that's not a good idea, and it's not a good attitude. If you're going to ask for help, I think it would be best to be able to offer your part in it. I call it responsibility, to show some responsibility, and you really can't do that too much. You know, if you're paying your taxes, then by all means, go to the government and ask for that. If you're voting, go to the government and ask for that. You know, I believe, you know, that we should be participating in supporting the system that we're taking from. And if we're not doing that, then we're equivalent to thieves. And that's just my point of view.
Very good. This is Cheryl again. 2 points. One is, I don't want the government determining what it is I need. That's my decision. I need to determine what I need. If they can determine I need that, then what else do they think I need? Do I need a shot to settle me down because I'm a little too hyper? Do I need some training in my thinking because not adjusted to what should be? I'm being very extreme, perhaps, but I don't need the government to decide for me what I need. I want to initiate that. Point number two is, if the government does that for me, if they supply for me funding for said services, I'm now limited. I'm now having to work within the amount that they set forth for me. I want to determine how much I want to spend on my own, whether it's a little or a lot. And if it's not enough, then I need to do something about that, don't I? As the gentleman said, responsibility. So that's my 2 cents.
There's another thing, too. I think there's a lot to be said for character and pride. If you know that you can look to yourself to get things done, that you either figure out a way or know someone personally who can help you get something done, and you found that person yourself, there's a lot of pride in knowing that you're able to do that. Now, I know pride can be a bad thing, but it can also be a very good thing. And there's a lot to be said for integrity and character, too. And I think that the problem with getting things from the government is that the more we get, the more they give, the more they feel they have to give, the more we get. It's a never-ending cycle. And it doesn't foster initiative, personal initiative and incentive to direct your life or to handle your life. And where you need it, it's fine to get help. I think it should be there for the people who need it. But when people get something from someone, a government or from somewhere else that they don't have to pay for, I suspect that sometimes there's a lack of discretion or thought. I don't think the same level of thought goes into something that you know you can get that someone else will pay for that you have to think about paying for yourself.
Well, I've heard the government, buying people solve from one extreme to the other in some ways. I've heard someone say that they're silent when it comes to asking for the rights on the one hand, but on the other, some are pretty vocal on something. I think Cheryl mentioned about someone giving you a shot because to calm you down. Government can do that sort of thing.
Well, I have to tell you, there's a number of things that I think are important in this scenario. One is that services for the blind, generally speaking, ought to be made available on a financial need basis. So, Paul, I have no problem you're describing, as long as that program is needs-based rather than simply disability-based. If you have a disability, you should have government financial support for you in providing these kind of services. If I can pay for them myself, I think I should be expected to pay for them myself. Along with the right to work comes the responsibility to pay, and I think that's part of that equation. I also am a very active member of my local Lions Club, and I'm very aware of the decrease of the number of individuals who are interested in being involved in service clubs. These aren't social clubs. They're clubs whose whole purpose is to bring people together to help other people, from those who have something to offer to those who have a need. And we're really struggling to get people involved at that level right now in all of the service org. Those circumstances, having government step in, I'm not sure is the best answer. I think it'd be better if there were programs out there to encourage more volunteerism than to come up with a way to, again, fund people to do things that we used to rely on volunteers to do in our society. Lastly, when you compare our society here in the United States, and for that matter, the developed world, we always turn to government to do things for us before we turn to family. That somehow or other, turning to family is abuse of some kind, while turning to government is not. And I'm not sure that I buy into that. In fact, I'm pretty sure I don't buy into that. I always provide when I could and accept assistance when I needed. And if we taught one another to do that and honored that, both in terms of respecting the person who's in need, as if being in need is somehow or other a shameful thing or a lessening thing. It's a temporary thing, and I think we should acknowledge that. So all in all, a needs-based process I'd be comfortable with. Need being both financial and maybe also based to some degree on the severity of the disability, like a deafblind person, for example, might be in a greater need than a person who's exclusively blind, that kind of thing.
Anishio Korea, who's kind of lurking in the background here, says that in other parts of the country, though, in other parts of the world, there are some interesting situations, or at least it seems to me that there are. There are societies where the expectation is that people who are blind are entitled to assistance. And what that assistance enables them to do is to be full participants in the community. In Scandinavian countries, in Europe, for example, if a blind person is going to travel, there is an expectation that someone is going to travel with that person. If a person has shopping to do, there is an expectation that someone from the community, usually paid for by the government or by the volunteer agency with whom that person works, is going to provide assistance. And the net result is that blind people are much more fully included in the communities in which they live. Now, it's certainly possible to argue that they're not as independent, but from their perspective anyway, they see these folks as representing the bridge that actually enables them to remain fully in charge of their own independence and capable of spending their lives in fruitful and effective volunteering without having to worry about the day-to-day scary stuff of getting around, the day-to-day scary stuff of knowing where things are coming from. And it's a model that I think has some merit, and I'll open it for some comment.
I think it would probably be a good idea. Since you look at it that way, it sounds like it might be a good idea to follow something like that. I mean, we talk about being independent, and you know, we've always thought being independent is doing everything for yourself, but then I heard another side of that. Being independent doesn't necessarily mean doing everything for yourself, but knowing how to get done what you need to get done. And that goes back to probably asking for help if you need it, or knowing how to get the help you need.
I guess the other point that I would make, and I think it probably does need to become a part of the equation, there are many who believe that blind people for the whole of their life will pay a higher cost for getting things done than others will. And so many countries have taken the position that because of that, there is an expectation that the society in which blind people live has an obligation to provide, if you like, that differential income or differential assistance that bridges that gap between the place where blind folks are and the place where other folks are. And the advantage of that kind of an attitude is that it therefore makes it possible, for example, for folks to be comfortable doing what ACB has actually asked that be done. That is, that the ceiling for earnings, and NFB's asked for this too, that the ceiling for earnings under SSDI be taken off, so that a blind person essentially could continue to collect SSI or SSDI essentially for as long as they live, being paid this money as a differential that allows them to go out and get the help that they need to create equal access to the community.
I have to say, Paul, that having worked within the rehabilitation these some odd years, albeit in a very specialized area of technology, I'm very concerned about the number of individuals who are allowing themselves to become weak in terms of independence as a result of support systems that provide a service at a level that doesn't require that they struggle or try to do things. I'll give a couple cases in point. Individuals who have sufficient funds to go to the national convention but are on public assistance to pay for their rent, or on public assistance to pay for their food, those kind of. I guess I think that there are certainly cases on a case-by-case basis where an individual, as a result of their situation, combination of financial and social situation, need that kind of support, and I would want to think that the government I pay taxes to would support that kind of service. But I also think that same government service has a tendency to weaken us by not requiring effort on our part. I remember when I was first unemployed after having worked for a while, in order to collect my unemployment check, I had to show that I was out looking for work. And that certainly is not an expectation that our government has about blind people. They should be able to get, quote, their benefit without indicating or showing or demonstrating in any way that they've worked to the best of their ability and the social situation push that. So, to some degree, I think that government needs to be prepared to be the safety net. But that safety net cannot be so comfortable as to allow individuals to sit back and enjoy a fairly middle-class life without effort. So, to some degree, I agree with it in rare occasions, but they're rare.
Mm-hmm. Brian, this is Bonnie, and I'd like to respond to that. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think that one of the things that happens to a lot of blind people who are not working, and I am among those, is that many people associate primarily with a lot of other blind people, and they forget that there is a whole world of other people out there who probably need things desperately. Now, yes, they have vision, but that doesn't necessarily mean they have everything they want or need. And one of the things that I've become increasingly concerned with a 21-year-old son who is working a minimum wage job, is that there are other people who need things too. And I still hear an awful lot from some blind people, and I know I'm probably going to make some enemies here, but there still are a lot of blind people who are saying things like, government doesn't do enough for us, we don't get enough of this, or we don't get enough of that. Well, there are lots of other disabilities out there where people don't get nearly as much as we do. And there are a lot of other people out there, let's face it, if you were sighted, I mean, you could go on public assistance, you could get welfare, of course, and you would have to work work for it, and obviously blind people don't have to do that. But sighted people, as long as they're able and can't prove any sort of disability, have to work in order to be able to pay the rent. And you can become too used to receiving. And I wish there was more incentive for people to be working, more in place that would really encourage people to work. I'd rather see money go into more job programs and job placement things and you know, decent, honorable jobs that are, you know, of course, that meet the skills and the abilities of the person trying to get them. But that I'd like to see a change of heart and spirit and mind in people so that people would start to do that rather than be sitting around. I think you're right. I think we weaken people by giving them things because then they just sit there and wait for more that they can receive. And not all people. There are lots of people that are blind that want to work. But I have a feeling there are an awful lot that don't.
Brian, to Cheryl, responding to you. My whole argument with what you're saying, I mean, it's a pie in the sky in that this is a little friendly debate. I hope that's okay. Because please tell me, please, when does the government operate on an individual basis? They don't. That would be wonderful. But they don't. They don't have the time. They don't have dot, dot, dot. They just don't have it. And they set standardized this and standardized that. I've been on the end of receiving from the government, as the gentleman was speaking earlier, and in actual real need of something, but because it didn't meet the criterion, I was an individual. I was an individual, and I had certain things that were particular to my situation. They didn't care. Not one single bit did they care. It's just I didn't meet the criteria that was set forth, and so therefore... Too bad. So it's a really complicated issue. If you have a benevolent government that their interest is truly, I mean, this is like a soapbox for me. The government's supposed to serve the people, and it's turned around, in my opinion. The people serve the government. And if you live in a country where that has been set forth as the way the government works, that it serves people, that what it does is motivated by actual compassion for its people, you know, that's set out from the beginning. You have people that are interactive, and I can see truly, as Paul was saying, how that can get people into their cities. I know I feel like a transplanted plant because in Washington State, I knew where I was going. I had my friends and yada, yada. And here in Miami, it's starting all over again. And so I'm sitting here thinking about, gosh, you know, what if I was in this situation where I had all of this sort of thing. Oh, I want to go here, I want to go there, I want to do this, and I want to do that. And all it is a phone call away and a government mandated thing for me, and I can just go and do. And that sounds really nice. It really does. It sounds nice. But it just... I can't put into words without taking the whole thing time. But I think you understand where I'm coming from.
Sure. You know, I'm frustrated in that as a blind person in the Boston area, you get free transit, while if you're a quadriplegic, you pay half fare. And the free transit that the blind get is because they're blind, not because they're in financial need for it. The argument of the MBTA is that to impose a needs test on that benefit would be more expensive than the benefit itself, and therefore they're not going to do it. I have access to property tax abatement. Where a certain portion of my property tax, just solely because I'm blind, I can get back in a check at the end of each year. And that's just two examples of the times when I get things because I'm blind, not because I'm in financial need of that benefit. I'm not sure that those kinds of things weaken me so much as a program that would provide for me at no effort on my part, no sweat equity in it, assistance to perform the tasks of daily life, unless, again, there is true financial need, no other way to do it, and that need is a true need as opposed to a want. Another case in point for me is recreational programs for blind and visually impaired individuals that allow them to do things such as go sailing every weekend throughout the summer for $5 a time, while a sighted person who wants access to that same recreational opportunity is going to pay $20 to $50 for the day, if that little. So under those circumstances, people saying, why didn't the state agency help me find a job, and at the same time they're there at the dock every weekend to go sailing. So I have some serious problems about an all services based program. process. And again, if I didn't see it day in and day out, year in and year out, it wouldn't concern me so much. And this is not so much as why don't they have to work as hard for what they get as I do for what I do. That's not the situation. I'm worried about the weakening of the individual as a result of too many givens in the process. And would this be such a given? I'm afraid it would be.
I understand where you're coming from, and I might have miscommunicated. I agree with what you're saying. And, gosh, I'm not going to restate it. I agree with what you're saying. I'm just saying the sad thing is that the government doesn't work on an individual basis. That's all. They just don't.
I think, Brian, that the bottom line that I was coming to, and obviously I was stating some of my opinions as extremes, by the way, we're coming to the place where we're going to be at the end of our program for this evening. But the bottom line for me is that we're inconsistent in what we advocate for. I think if we're really talking about a needs-based system, then we ought to be talking about that. And the needs-based system needs to operate across the board so that it should not be that every blind person is entitled to free transportation in Boston. It should not be that my transportation in Miami should be subsidized to the extent of 85 or 90% of its cost so that I can go from place to place whenever I want to, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It should not be that the more that I earn, the more I still have access to a range of things which I'm really not allowed to pay for and which I sometimes feel guilty for using. Shake a leg and other kinds of sailing is a good example of exactly the kind of thing that I'm talking about. And it seems to me that one of the things that we need to do is to rationalize more our whole attitude towards assistance and how that assistance is provided so that we're a little bit more consistent. I'm appalled by the fact that the American Council of the Blind and the NFB both actually want a cap to be taken off earnings so that blind people would qualify for SSI or SSDI for the rest of their lives. I have a problem with that. I'm not sure it's appropriate. But nevertheless, it's what both of our blindness organizations have voted by resolution to do. I should mention, by the way, that Anicio Correa has been kind of lurking around in the background, does not have a mic tonight, and one of the things that he just said is that he's wondering whether what Brian is actually... Anicio has raised a number of questions using text, and at the heart of them is basically the question of whether there really are some unmet needs that Brian isn't thinking about well enough. So perhaps one last comment from someone, and then we will wind this evening down.
Yeah, this is Brian Collins. I forgot to mention myself earlier. And anyway, I wanted to make a comment about responsibility, and I think that the one thing that none of the organizations right now are doing is talking enough about personal responsibility. Are we as individuals more important than the group, or is the group more important than the individual? And I think that this responsibility needs to be a major priority for us as individuals. And the only way that's going to happen is if the organizations who are currently representing us by choice or by chance to have them actually say that they can't do what they're doing unless we as individuals show responsibility. And I haven't seen that at all. And I think that that's where the majority of these organizations and institutions are dropping the ball. There's no education in what responsibility is or isn't or how to do that. So anyway, that's my comment.
To be a free society, it is rest on the individual to responsibility to do their part, and the problems that people have, you know, if they can't do for themselves, should be a needs-based thing. But also, people made good points about that we need to be careful that we don't weaken the individual. That people should do the best they can with the whatever situation they have to deal with. And I did that when I was employed, and now I'm retired, I'm glad I'm there. But I think that's the way life should be. We should be responsible for what we do. And if we need help, then we need to be able to know how to ask for it and know how to receive it when we get it.
Hopefully this isn't too off the thing, but I guess I find it interesting that it's quite a vicious circle, because if you are receiving SSI, and I, believe me, have in the past, so I don't believe I'm speaking out of turn, if you do receive SSI, it's difficult to find a job because of the penalties that happen as you begin to earn money. You sort of end up spinning around and around and around, always at the same income level. So, gosh, how do I word this? So here we are saying, should the government come along and give us assistance for some? Well, it's okay if you don't have enough money, perhaps, in some situations, but yet the very government that says, well, you need to earn more money is the very government that is stifling a person from doing it. It's difficult unless you get a job that really can just douse that SSI to where you don't need it anymore. You can kiss it goodbye. You're sort of spinning in circles. So it's a trap to me. Once you start depending on the government, you're stuck. And the very people who say, come out, be free, or go free yourself, are the very ones that are wrapping a net around. So anyway, it's frustrating.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've reached the point where we need to call it an evening. And I think that's issues that lie at the heart of who we are as people who are blind, and perhaps as well who ACB and NFB are as organizations representing people who are blind. How do we optimize our ability to exist effectively and competently within a society? And how do we balance our need for assistance with our need for independence? Not easy questions, and there are no easy answers. I think we've certainly raised a number of difficult questions tonight. While we probably don't have any finite answers, we hope that what we've done is managed to give our listeners a good deal to think about. On behalf of all of those who participated in Tuesday Topics tonight, and on behalf of our producer, Brian Charleston, our recorder-editor, Steve Bauer, and George Bies of Talking Communities, this is Paul Edwards in Miami, Florida, saying thanks for being with us tonight.
To participate in the recording of Tuesday Topics, we invite you to join us on Tuesday evenings in the U.S. at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's Wednesday, 1 hour Universal Time. The program is recorded in the Our Place Politics chat room at ourplace.acbradio.org. All you need is a microphone that is plugged into your computer sound card. A few minutes before each show begins, those online will be happy to assist with audio checks and to answer questions about the chat room service and how it works. An announcement promoting the topic to be discussed will be emailed to the ACB Radio Friends list early each week. So we hope you will come and join us Tuesday each week when Tuesday Topics is being recorded. Again, the URL is ourplace.acbradio.org.